This episode is brought to you in part by UC Irvine's Executive Master's Program for Human-Computer Interaction and Design. As a user experience professional, UCI's hybrid program will allow you to maintain your job while pursuing the master's degree that will propel your career forward. Stay tuned to learn more about this exciting program. Find your place in a safe, caring, generous, and inspiring community of UXers who are passionate about fighting for the users and making a difference in this world through great design. Try User Defenders Community free for 7 days at community.userdefenders.com. More to come.
Have an attitude of gratitude that you say, my plate is full. Let me go and fight another war. Let me go and make my life better. Not dwelling in that victimhood that we live in a slum was probably the biggest learning of my life. You're still in a much better position than a lot of people.
Welcome to the User Defenders Podcast, where we interview UX superheroes who fight for the users in order to inspire and equip you to do the same. And now, here's your host, Jason Ogle.
Greetings, User Defenders. Welcome to this incredibly inspiring and moving season finale. I'm your host, Jason Ogle. You know how they say I've saved the best for last? Well, believe me when I say I have saved the best for last. I also say on this episode, and mean it, that if you're not motivated, inspired, and moved by the end, check your pulse because you may not be alive. Shahina Attarwala was born in the slums of Mumbai and had to overcome tremendous adversity and obstacles in order to plow her path to success in not only the field of UX, but especially in life, to become a major contributor and force for good for humanity. Her experiences have given her a much deeper and greater insight into the field of design and personal growth, particularly in the areas of grit, growth mindset, innovation, and empathy. In other words, Shahina is the epitome of what this show is all about. There's so much to glean and take to heart in this episode. All the mentioned links, transcript, and Eli Jorgensen's complete superhero artwork can be found on the show notes page at userdefenders.com/070. Now, please enjoy this powerful, enlightening, and super inspiring season finale with Shahina Attarwala. I am delighted to welcome to the show Shahina Attarwala. Did I say that right, Shahina?
Yes, you did.
Awesome. I usually ask that before, but we're doing this live like Bill O'Reilly. So, okay. So I usually, Defenders, as you know, I usually will take a few moments in the beginning to sort of touch on some bio points. I used to read the entire thing word for word. And then Andy Budd's like, that sounds kind of scripted. And so I started doing like bullet points. And the thing here about with Shahina is I feel like a lot of what we're going to talk about today is her story. And so for the sake of not spoiling what she's going to really dive deep into, I'm just going to tell you that Shahina is a UX design manager at Zoomcar, and that's India's first self-driving platform. That sounds fascinating. I hope we get to talk about that a little bit as well. That's all I'm going to tell you. That's all you get. That's the tweet. So here we go. I'm going to say officially, Shahina, welcome to User Defenders. I am super excited to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much, Jason. I'm equally excited and I'm really looking forward for this chat today.
You have a fascinating story. I want to jump right in and just let you tell us your story. And I basically just want to kind of preface this with, you know, take us back to your childhood. You know, tell us what it was like growing up in the slums of Mumbai and what your family life was like. Because I know that's a really vital part of where you are now as a UX designer and the journey that you've been on. For how long have you been on the journey of being a designer and now a design leader?
It's almost 10 years now.
Okay, wow. So take us back. I really want to start from the beginning here. I think it's critical to our conversation.
Yeah. So Jason, I was born in a village in Uttar Pradesh, which is in North India. And my father was a hawker here in Bombay, in Dharavi. He used to sell perfume and roam around and sell perfumes. And it so happened that I had to move to Bombay with my dad, and he was living here with his brother. It was a family of like around, after I moved here, it was a family of around like 15 odd people in like a 10 by 20 house. And, you know, the house was made up of like, you know, like a shanty, wooden, wood and sort of steel roof. And at that point, that was I don't know how to put it, but when I moved here that time, we did not even have like water in our house. My mom used to go out and fetch water. The only memory of my childhood of hers is that either she's cooking, cleaning, or either washing clothes or going to fill water. And this is exactly like how my life was back then when I moved here as a child.
I'm American. I feel like I can't identify with that challenge. Like I grew up in a pretty small house, and my dad was very successful in his work. There's many who have a humble beginning. There's some certainly who are born with a silver spoon in their mouth, and all they ever know is kind of privilege and just kind of whatever they want they can have. But I just feel like a lot of us have humble beginnings. And you certainly, like, I mean, the small house I grew up with, one bathroom and two siblings and two parents, like that was hard to even, but I had, I had plumbing, I had, you know, it's like, it's those things, those little things. And I'm just curious, like, what did that do to your mentality? Like, what was that like as a kid? Did you even really know the difference as a kid? That was this just, cause as kids, like you're so resilient, right? As a child. And you just accept your surroundings, and you don't really know any different. Like, did you know that there was something different or lacking about your upbringing or your environment?
You're absolutely right, Jason. Back then, I did not know that there's a better world out there. So for me, that was the best. And honestly, I was okay with all of that, right? Whether it's, you know, if I'm going out, we did not have a toilet growing up. So there was a public toilet. I mean, and it was extremely, extremely filthy. There were human feces all around, and I will have to literally take a bucket of water from my house, walk it up till there, and then in dark, filthy place I had to go. But I mean, when you're a child, there are women who ask you to just go out and defecate on the garbage, because it's literally like slums. It's literally like growing in the garbage. And when you're out there defecating, there are you know, boys and men who are trying to molest you, tease you, do gestures at you. So it's not easy growing up. But one of the things that I realized was, when I was going to school, I faced, you know, I used to really look forward going to school, because I got access to clean toilet. And that was amazing. You know, I was like, wow, there's something. So that's an achievement for me probably at that age. And I was like, no, I don't want to carry the bucket and go. It's so heavy. And those ladies, other adult ladies, ask me to go outside, and, you know, men molest me. And then so in school, I used to really, really look forward to it. And it was very peaceful. You know, I did have access to something better. And whenever I did, I knew that this is what I wanted in the future. I would want to have a clean toilet. That was probably my ambition back then as a child.
Wow. I'm just humbled by what you shared. I am totally humbled. So we're going to dive even deeper here. I know I read your bio. I read some of the information that you sent me, and you grew up in India, and the culture tends to be somewhat repressive to women. Would that be accurate? Is that an accurate statement?
I would probably just talk about myself and what I have seen. It is, in most part, it is, especially from where I come in North India, it's very, very repressive. Forget about talking about other women. Myself, you know, being in Bombay and the situation that I was living in, I still felt that it is still better than living in a village, because out there, I would have probably been married by now, having 5 kids and washing utensils. Here, at least I had basic education. But growing up, my father wanted me to get married after my 10th grade, which is like probably at the age of 15. And that's something that did not go down well with me. And we started having fallouts. As a child, I was very rebellious. So I used to be beaten up almost every day. There's something that I knew what I did not want. I did not like people abusing me. I did not like people beating me. And for all I knew, this was just getting magnified day by day in the life that I was having. And, you know, my dad was absolutely against my education. But I sort of, you know, after a lot of beating and constant abuses, I had a conversation with him. I told him one day that, you know, you're trying to curb my education. You want me to get married, and I don't even know who the person is and what kind of a man he is going to be. But if you're going to curb my education, I won't be able to achieve anything in life. You know, if tomorrow if I have a problem in life, I'll be so dependent on other people, and you won't be there to protect me. So you have to at least empower me to, you know, study and make something out of my life. I am not doing anything wrong. I'm not doing anything that will hurt you. So you have to give me that freedom, because you're not going to be there with me in my entire life all the time. So I knew that my parents also did not know any better. They themselves were abused. They themselves came from a village and they did not know any better, right? So what else can I expect more from them? I mean, that I still remember that night when I went to him and I spoke to him this, because I was ready to leave my house. I packed my bags in a piece of cloth.
How old were you?
I was around 16.
Okay.
Yeah, and I told him that I'm leaving. This life that I have here in the slums, it's not any great. I can always go and sleep on the roads. I'm very resilient like that. So I'm not afraid to lose anything, because at this point I have nothing, right? So somewhere I think he understood what I was meaning to. So he started sort of, you know, letting me go ahead and, you know, study at least. And I mean, that he didn't completely support it, but at least he was not interfering too much after that.
What were some of the pivotal aha moments for you to when you just said, you know, this culture that I'm growing up with, which is sacred, I know, the fact that it was kind of upsetting to your dad, that you wanted to get an education, you wanted to make a path for yourself that really did break tradition. What was that like? What was the pivotal, like, aha moment for you that made you do that?
You know, Jason, growing up, like I said, I saw my mother being beaten up, and I was surrounded by a lot of women, right, whether it's in my village or slums, and I used to hear them talk a lot, right? The one of the essence of each conversation would lie around, oh, my husband did this, oh, my husband did that, but what can we do? We can't do anything, right? This is our fate. This is what women are made for, cooking, cleaning, giving birth to children. And I realized that, why is it that they are so helpless? What is it? You know, and constantly talking with my mother about this, even though she has no exposure about the outside world, she never had any friends, but she is very revolutionary in her thinking, right? So one fine day when I was talking to her about a problem, and she told me that if I was you, right, if I was you and I was educated, I would move out. She's like, I don't have education. I don't have parents who will accept me back. And so here it is. That's why I'm cooking and cleaning in your house. That was a conversation that I had as a woman to woman, not as a mother to daughter, right? And that really made me take courageous steps as well. Though she was also not very supportive, but just the fact that when she became neutral and she spoke as a woman, the thoughts were so moving.
Now that you have really found a lot of success in a field that you love and that you're so passionate about, and you've worked obviously very hard to get where you are now, and obviously overcome a lot of obstacles, more than many of us listening would ever be able to identify with. I'm curious, what's your relationship like with your family now? I guess maybe with your dad. It seemed like, did you and your dad bump heads the most? It seems like your mom had some empathy and understanding of what you were trying to do. Well, tell me about that. What's that like now that you've achieved this success and you've plowed your own path?
You know, my father, he and I were like enemies. Like, I at some point I wished he was dead, you know, like, you know how teenagers are, they go to their bed and that, like, I don't have freedom, I wish they just die. But in the middle of the nights, you know, when you have no one to talk to, you like try and figure out, like, see, I knew that violence or aggression won't work here. I wanted to find a middle way where they also grow with me, right? Because eventually my success would be nothing if it's just an individualistic goal, because I knew that they loved me. And whenever parents, they oppress you, it is also coming out from a place of fear, because they knew what kind of a place we were living in. They knew that I was getting molested, right? When I'm going to school, there are men who are constantly passing comments, and so they wanted to protect me from all that abuse and sexual molestation that's happening as well. So they probably, you know, didn't want me to be exposed to that side of the world where I get freedom and at any point I'm alone or mistreated. But now my relationship with my dad is very cordial. We've learned to coexist. We are very empathetic towards each other. And I understood that they didn't know any better at that point. And they also understood now that, you know, what the decisions that I took regarding my education, they were best. And now both my parents, they are actually advocating for girl child education in our extended families and our villages and our slums. So even if, you know, parents of girls, they don't want their female child to get educated, but my parents at least say that teach her some life skills, whether it's stitching, painting, computer, something that'll help her be independent in some way. And a lot of girls have been educated and learned skills. And because I have gone ahead and done so much, other parents feel that, you know, oh, it's okay. If she can do it, our daughter can do it too. And that's immensely fulfilling for me, because I have not just done things for myself, but when I look back, I feel so humbled and happy that, you know, my journey has not just been about me. It's been about more women and more children that are being influenced and inspired.
That's so, so awesome. It's inspiring to hear that. And it feels like there was like a 180 that sort of happened with your folks along this journey. And you were a big part of that, like them watching you succeed and watching your tenacity and your curiosity and your drive. That's inspiring. I mean, we're just getting started here, but I'm pumped up already. So I'm curious about design. Like, how does design enter your journey? How did you find design?
When I was in school, I wasn't a very good student, right? I was, English wasn't my first language, Hindi was. So whenever I went to school, it was so difficult for me to decipher what the teacher is actually talking. She used to speak fast. And so I felt so left out, right? And because of my grades and poor English, I didn't have really many girls who were fond of me, who wanted to be friends with me. So, yeah, but then one fine day in the late 90s, early 2000, I guess, in my school, there was a computer course that was started, and I overconfidently, I said, I'm going to learn computer. I want to learn computer, even though my grades are so bad. But there was something in me that I said, I want to learn. And I filled the form and I said, yeah, let's do this. And the teacher rejected my form and she put me in a needlework class. Stitching really? Class. And I went to the teacher. I said, ma'am, I asked for computers. I don't want to go in that needlework because I already know that. I already do all of this at home, right? Like, I'm already a half mother at home. So taking care of my siblings, I want to learn this. This is what I need. She's like, no, your grades are not good and everything. So that was the biggest letdown at that point, right? Like, I was so furious. And every time that needlework period used to go, I used to first go to the computer class, see all the girls working and touching the computer. And I was like, wow, this is magic. Like, I know I need this magic in my life. Mm-hmm. And I was creative as well. I used to draw, paint. I loved doing that in school. I realized that I was good at it. And there was a little course that got started in my area around, and a friend was talking about it. And I said, yes, this is what I need in my life right now. And there were always these aha moments, right? Like, God is guiding me, like, China, now go there. So I said, yeah, yeah, I need this. And then I went to Dad and I said, okay, listen, this is a course and I want to do it. I got thrashing off my life. I was like, do whatever. I need to do this. Now you tell me what you want. If you want me to do something so that I get that. So there was a bargain that started. So he's like, okay, you will take your brother and then you will, you know, cover yourself completely. And XYZ, I said, I'll do everything what you want. You want me to take an army of men? I'm ready to do that. And so I joined the course and, you know, with a lot of resistance. But there was no looking back then. You know, I used to just spend entire day in the class in my college, I used to finish my college. I used to not even go home. I used to just go to the computer class because then there was internet. I think internet was the best thing that happened to me. After my school, I said, you are my father, you are my mother, because I could learn so much from it, right? Like day and night, I was just always there. So, and there was no looking back. Then I started doing small time projects, freelancing, doing projects for my college, for different other colleges, and, you know, starting making a little money here and there and collecting money for buying a computer then, you know, like every rupee, every 10 rupee, I used to walk back home. I used to not even take a bus. So I used to walk back home, not have snacks in the college and just save that money because I knew my father is definitely not going to buy. And he said a no straight. We didn't have that much. Right. So I said, it's okay. I'll do something. And I bought my computer. I bought that. Then I bought a MacBook. Then I bought an iMac. Like, I didn't hesitate for once that, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I just did that. Like, there was no looking back after it.
Wow. That's so inspiring. What was driving you the whole time that you were doing this? Like, what was it?
Yeah, I still keep thinking. I think I just wanted to get out of that. And I knew that I will get out of it because once I've seen a life that's better, once I've seen that it is possible, you know, adversities are there, but you can have a life that you want, that you dream of, and it is possible. And I knew that I was different and I was unapologetic about it. You know, I didn't conform to the views that I am a girl and I can't do this because I've already seen that, right? There was nothing new that I was giving to myself if I was just going to adapt whatever is ready-made given to me, you know? So I knew that I didn't want that life. That's something that I was very sure from very early on in my life. If someone would abuse me, I knew I didn't want to be abused. What else did I want in return? I didn't know, but I knew that I didn't want this treatment or this life. So I think that whole thing of just getting out of it was something, you know, it's like a survival instinct that either you do or die. That's how it was.
There's so many things I want to ask you. And I'm on this journey with you, Shahina. And like, I just feel like you're taking me to places that I could not have gotten to on my own. Like you, I just appreciate so much your transparency and your vulnerability and telling your story. It's deep and it's powerful. How did growing up in the slums of Mumbai with really nothing and so many obstacles, like how did that influence you as a human-centered designer? Like what did that do for you now in your profession that you can look back and go, wow, that's why I do this or that's why I do that, right?
I think you know, growing back with very limited resources, you always try to optimize. And, you know, your problem solving skills, like just one of the very few examples I would give you is the bucket, the toilet bucket that I was talking to you about when I used to go. Open bucket, right? An open bucket is something when we used to take, it used to hurt our hands. And by the time we reached the public toilet, half of the water would have been spilled. You try taking that and half of the water would be spilled because you're walking a long distance, you're tired, you're keeping that again. So what we did was we took an oil container. An oil container has a much better grip, something that we get here in India. So at the where the cap of the container is, you heat the knife and you cut it out very small. And then you remove that and then you use it as a bucket. It's not completely, it just has like a small rounded cut opening and then you use it for that. And that actually does not let your hand get tired. It's even more robust when you're picking it up, and helps you walk a long distance. Now, that is something I, as a young girl or living anywhere, I didn't need too much of thinking. But had it not been for the constraints of resources, I would not have been able to develop that idea, right? Like something so small. And in every aspect of life, we are constantly trying to optimize over there. That's one thing, you know, trying to understand the problem that we have, whether it's a leaking roof, whether it is water entering your house during the monsoons. How do you take it out? Because we don't have any openings. So what you do is you use little plates, you use whatever, you know, vessels you have, and you remove it. So these kind of constant, you know, problem solving during your living there, it helps you become a very frugal liver. You know, you're like living life very frugally. And when you are frugal, you try to iterate quickly so that you optimize for your, as you put it in today's world, your best MVP, and quickly test it and iterate it. That's exactly what I think a lot of people like me do it. And in villages especially, you know, there's a lot of frugal living that happens. And I think that's the hub of innovation. When you try and use things which you already have for a purpose more than one, that's when you start learning to solve multiple problems with just a few solutions that are available.
Many UX professionals want a master's degree, but they don't want to move or pause their careers to do it. Thanks to UC Irvine's one-of-a-kind program, as a user experience professional, you can receive a world-class master's degree without quitting your job, commuting, or moving. UCI blends in-person learning with the flexibility of online distance education in a top-ranked one-year program. UCI's alumni become distinguished UX designers, researchers, and strategists all over the world. When you're ready to elevate your user experience or design career, UCI's master's program for HCI and design will give you just the lift you need. Learn more about this amazing program at userdefenders.com/UCI. That's userdefenders.com/UCI. That makes so much sense to me, and how you explain that, because what better way to become a really good problem solver than to have like a lot of problems that you have to solve, right? Like, what better way to just flip that switch in your mind? And I'm sure it's not just something you flip. It's something that you become, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It's always like first principles right there, whether it's cooking, cleaning, going out to travel, anything it is. You're constantly thinking about the resources first and then the solution. I have this resource. How can I make the best use for it to build a solution? It's as simple as that.
That is the root of what we do, Defenders. We are problem solvers at the core. It ties into fighting for the users, which is a big message. That's the banner that I wave here at the show. We fight for the users like Tron. But it also lends itself to business, because without a business, we're hobbyists. That's the reality. We, without a business, without a cause, without something sustainable, we're still doing good. We're just maybe not doing good on the scale that we would like to do. And that's okay too, right? Like I say, if you want to change the world for one person at a time. That's how you do it. You're showing us that we can all be innovative. Where you are today and where you've come to as a result of a really difficult journey. You know, my hat is tipped to you. My heart is like really full for you in this journey you've been on. But I think the message here, Defenders, is we're all on different journeys. We all come from different environments. We all have a different upbringing. But the reality is that we can all do this. We can all innovate, and we can all become problem solvers if we truly desire.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. Like, you know, Jason, even today online, when I go and see some of the innovations that people are coming up with, like, for example, there's this innovation recently that I saw that, you know, when you sit on your toilet pot, there's a table, there's a small tool that people have designed where you put it under the pot and you put so that, you know, there can be a squatting position on the pot. And I was like, why can't people just use a bucket? It's already existing, right? You're trying to fool people in the name of innovation when something already can be used for multiple things. That's not innovation. It's just bullshit, right? You yourself can make so many things at home. See, the as designers, it's so important to understand the problem first, because we delve into solutions so fast that we forget about the problem. We feel that just being very superficial and aesthetic about the solution will actually make you a problem solver. No. If you want your solutions to be accepted by the masses, by scale, if you want to impact millions of life, the billion of life, then you have to go to the root of the problem and understand that. You know, that's exactly what Google is trying to do with the Next Billion project, right? They're trying to bring billions of the next billion people onto a tech platform, which is going to revolutionize the way people use technology. And that's what is my vision, right, for myself as well. Because when I'm coming up with solutions, when I'm solving problem, I don't look at it like a one-off thing. I look at it that how impactful it's going to be, right? Is this the best way? Is this the most scalable way, right? That's exactly what I think. And I think that sort of thinking really is important if you want to scale at a level where you impact millions of people. Because as a designer, you don't know who's using your design. You don't know how many people. So you might as well put your best shot forward, you know, with a lot of scientific thinking also, which is involved in it.
There's a quote I really like a lot about innovation. An innovator is not someone who creates something out of nothing. An innovator is someone who wakes up to the constraints caused by false assumptions and breaks out of them.
Wow, I'm hearing that for the first time, actually.
Isn't that great?
I'm going to copy it somewhere, Jason.
Yeah, do it. This is being recorded, thankfully. So... But I just really like that a lot, because I think that a lot of us really confuse what innovation truly means. And as designers, we need to be careful, because innovation is not about doing something nobody's ever done before. It's not. It's actually quite the opposite. It's about finding something that exists, something that people do already, that people use, and finding a new way to make that better, to make that a better experience. Steve Jobs did that with iPhone. Steve Jobs and Apple computer did that with iPhone. We did not know we needed a phone that played music, that accessed the internet, that did text messaging. We didn't know we needed that. And now we can't live without the stinking thing. Some of us put it under our pillows at night. We love it so much, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think it's changing behaviors, right? Your innovation should not be just there somewhere kept. It has to change your behavior. You need to evolve with it. So you're absolutely right. I totally agree with you.
Yeah, I like that. And then, you know, even just some of the examples that you're mentioning about a toilet. It's like there's just a toilet. All a toilet really is a bucket that looks better, that looks more attractive than that's all it is, folks. And, you know, some fancy pipes underneath that are hidden, you know, but that's the magic. That's the magic of design of the toilet. It's all the stuff you don't see underneath.
Yeah, actually, I work a lot in the sanitation space also, right, Jason?
Yeah, so tell us about
my
that.
Conversation at some point, it just involves toilets for some reason.
Thanks for clarifying that.
Yeah, otherwise people will like constantly think that she's so obsessed with poop.
Get your mind out of the gutter, Shahina. No.
I hear that a lot.
Oh, you do? Oh, funny. I thought I would be the innovator around that saying for you. No.
Yeah, I just wanted the people, you know, the defenders, to understand where my thought process is coming from, because I think whenever you are passionate about something, there is a history attached to it, you know, there is a shared value that you have attached to it, and that's why it becomes so close to your heart that you want to make something out of it. Like, no matter who that person is, you know, people who are innovating things, people who are solving problems, at some point they must have been touched by that problem, and that's why they pick it up to solve it.
So you have legal skills, is what I heard, and is what I read in your bio. You have some legal skills. Can you tell us about that and what that's done for you to help you make you a better designer?
Yes, I studied law as well, and I do paralegal services, which means that I help people especially women, again, coming back to that, who do not have access to legal, you know, consulting. Wow. So I do let them know that what is the best thing that they can do in this situation. Also, like in near future, you know, I'm very socially active in the sense I do a lot of social activism. I work in hygiene sanitation space as a social worker, and taking that course forward, maybe in my 40s, I would want to start my own enterprise, social enterprise, where I solve these kind of problems at a very large scale. What I do right now is at a very small scale, but that's why I studied law, because it always helps to have that as a skill and to take your course forward. But what I understood when I was studying law as well is that even the legal policies, the laws, they are designed, right? They're designed for people, like we design products for people, users, right? Yeah. The legal policies are also designed for people, keeping the problem, eventual problem that it's going to solve in mind. And it is tested, vetted also, you know, by multiple stakeholders, which could be policy makers, which could be experts in those fields, whether it's a domestic abuse law, whether it is an IT act, anything. So when I was going through and studying these 3 years, they made me realize that everything is designed. It is not just design that we see, but even designs that we don't see, whether it affects our behavior, whether it affects our life. Every single thing is designed on this planet.
Yeah,
I think God must be a designer.
I fully agree. Genesis 1:1, very first scripture. In the beginning, God created.
Yes, absolutely, Jason.
Sorry, evolutionists. I just don't see enough evidence that all of a sudden there was perfect order and design out of an explosion. And feel free to argue with me, on Twitter about that if you want. But yeah, I fully agree with you. There's way too much design in this world for there not to be a designer for everything, including our DNA and including this universe. Tell me about, so legal skills and frugal living, like what has that done for you in your empathy and compassion for fellow humans as a human-centered designer? How has that helped you?
You know, like my empathy, I think I always tell this to people when they talk about empathy, you know, that your empathy begins at home and your empathy begins with the people you work with closely. Forget about the users. You're a UX designer later. First, try and empathize with the tech guy that you're working with, the product manager you're working with, the business head you're working with. Because so many times I see our fellow designers, they're so bullish and strong-headed that, no, we are only going to represent users. Yes, that's all cool, but these people are also your teammates who are trying to solve the same problem. Maybe their approach is different. So understand why they're behaving that way, right?
Yeah.
Because once you do that, they will become your teammates. They will actually take your cause forward. You will have more people who will speak your language. And being a designer is also about selling your vision, not just selling your design. Because once you've sold a vision, you have sold an entire product, right? So how do you sell that vision of your design? Not just two or three screens, but your vision. When you talk in a larger context, people understand, people relate to stories. They don't relate to, you know, one or two screens or this button or that font. They relate to stories. How are you conveying that story? That's so important. Like you spoke about compassion, right?
Yeah.
You know, a couple of years back, my mother and I, we were talking. She and I have a lot of conversations about how this world can be a better place now. She and I were having a conversation about this family in UP, in Uttar Pradesh, a very poor family of 3-4 girls and a mother living. They did not have a toilet in their house. So in villages, what happens is these girls, these women, they have to go in the fields to ease themselves. And when the crops are there in the fields, it's okay. You know, they can just sit somewhere. But when the crops are harvested, it's so difficult because then it's land. Then they have to go and find a tree. And it exposes them to a lot of molestation, eve teasing, or even rape sometimes.
Oh,
and my heart broke when I was hearing that. And I said, Ma, I'll try and do something. I keep doing this. And this was one of the projects that I took up. I actually crowdfunded a toilet to build in their home. I gathered people. I sent some funds, collected funds. I asked one of my relatives in the village to go to that village to build it for them. And, you know, I made an entire project and a case study out of it. And it was published in the United Nations website as well.
Wow.
So, I think things are possible. It's you, if you desire to do something, if you have compassion, empathy for your fellow human beings, it's only then can you solve the problem. I can't be an arrogant designer and still say I'm empathetic towards my users. That's never going to happen. You're just fooling yourselves, right? By just learning a few tools, you cannot say you're empathetic just because you built a screen. There's much more deeper connection to it, right? So these kind of things. And I feel compassion should not just be in design. It's everywhere. And it just, it's for me, it happens to be design.
This episode is also made possible by something super cool, an alternative to the .com domain name. It's the, drumroll please, .design domain name. Try saying that 5 times fast. So if you're a designer, and I know you are, and you've thought of a sweet name for your website that just isn't available under .com, check out .design. Chances are the perfect domain name you want is waiting for you on a bearskin rug. Okay, maybe not the rug, but wouldn't that be great? Head to userdefenders.com/porkbun now and use coupon code DEFENDERS on the checkout page to get literally a free year of a .design domain name bundled with free email hosting, Whois privacy, and even SSL certs. Don't wait. Grab your .design domain name now before someone else does. Go to userdefenders.com/porkbun now and use coupon code DEFENDERS. I'm a big fan of empathy. I feel like any life-changing product or service, anything designed, really, if their empathy isn't at the core of it, it's just not going to be as effective as it could be. Because you're not considering the people using what you're creating. You're not thinking about them. You're not talking to them, right? Like some people say, if you're not talking to users, it's not user experience. So I'm a big fan of empathy for so many reasons, beyond design. It's just, I think it's just one of the unique signifiers, to use a Don Norman quote there, a signifier of us as humans. I'm a huge fan. I love that story. And you mentioned stories. And that's another reason why I'm so glad you're on the show, Shahina, is because I really believe that stories are what really stick with us. That helps us learn the best, is when we hear stories and we can kind of tie it into a message or a takeaway, right? And so that's really, I'm a huge fan of you in that way, that you have so many stories to tell, you have so much to offer and helping others. I want to kind of talk about your experience you have with Don Norman, because that was a really special, like, I think you spent like a full day with him. Like, he was consulting with you. He was doing a talk out there. I don't want to, I guess I'll let you tell the story because you were there. So I want to hear about that story.
Yeah, actually, I volunteer for this organization called iSpirit. It is a not-for-profit organization, and I offer my user experience skills at a pro bono basis. And he was down here, talking with us, members of iSpirit as well, about how we can, you know, solve a human problem in India, and looking at the problems at a very user-centric approach. And I had an entire day with him where I spoke to him about how I'm passionate about education, right? Like, I told him one of my stories about how I explained solar system to my mother, you know, because she doesn't understand what Jupiter, Pluto is. What is solar system? For these people to understand that sun is, you know, the earth is round, is a big deal. So, so when I came from school and I had to explain it to her how I did that, and I was telling him the story that I explained to her in Hindi, that how the sun is in the center, the earth is round, earth has water. If you go to, you know, say, for example, US, it's night there and it's day in India because of the rotation, etc., right? How to break that information in chunks that is chewable for her, you know, that she can understand. Because, hey, I know that I understand, but does she also understand? And if I want to coexist with her, I have to share knowledge with her so that we can have conversations. And that's how I think equality in this world will ever exist. That we have to share knowledge. We have to bring the person who does not have that knowledge at our part, right? So I explained to her in Hindi, and he just he got so excited about that because he himself is a person who is extremely passionate about education, and he totally believed in my story. And he, when he was giving an official talk later to the designers that day, and he actually used that example, and I was like, yes, my life is successful now that Don has used my example. I'm done. Like, I'm so happy, right? I was in so much awe that day because, you know, I think the fact that he also believes in education in a very different way, because I don't think people who do not have access to science can now go to class one and study. But there are certain basics that we can definitely expose them to so that they start being critical thinkers, right? Not believe in the stupid theory of Earth is flat. For example, people from my village, when they come and see a sea, right, an ocean, they think it's a big lake.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
Like, that's how it is.
Yeah.
So we just need to at least provide people with basic critical thinking tools, and this being one of them, that science is so, so important. Not that I'm an expert, but just the fact that we shared that same value helped us, speak in conversation. Like, he actually squatted in front of like 200 odd top-notch designers in India and said, see, the culture here is that Indians can squat and I can't. He was so, so candid. And wow. I loved that fact that I was like, hey, if he's Don Norman and he's not ashamed to squat in front of so many people and talk about a relevant user behavior, I am nobody to be ashamed of talking about my life story. Because I know that if he would not have done one or two things, I would not have probably understood what he's trying to talk to us. And being vulnerable and being candid and open and honest in an interview or talk is so, so important, because I feel it's being true to your audience. Like, you know, every defender who's hearing this right now, it will be unfair to them if I wasn't myself right here.
Amen, sister. That's so cool. So one of the things that Don mentioned, and I think it might have even been a part of your conversation with him that day, was the importance of curiosity for designers. Not just importance, it is critical for designers to have curiosity. So what I'm wondering, and obviously you're a very curious person, and that's, I believe, one of the things that's propelled you so far, is being so curious. And you have some funny things in your bio about, like, asking so many questions. Well, why is it this way? Why is my brother this way? Or why is, you know, why?
Yeah.
And those are good things to ask. Why, right? Like Simon Sinek's, like, people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. And I think asking why is another good reason for that. So I'm curious, not to, you know, no pun intended, or maybe pun intended, sure. I'm curious, is it possible to teach curiosity? And what do you think about it? If so, how? How do you teach curiosity to other people, especially designers?
It's totally possible to teach curiosity. You know, like, I love talking to children.
Oh,
I
yes.
absolutely love, because I think it's amazing to talk to them. You know, I just call any random kid as like, hi, what do you study? I study so-and-so. Why are you studying that? Oh, my parents put me in that class. But why are you doing it then? Do you enjoy it? Like, these kind of questions, and I make them think. You know, and then they just roll their eyes like, why is she talking to me like this? You know, is she mad? Does she have nothing better to do? But my point is that kids start thinking. They will start thinking. You know, if you tell them, be curious, they're not going to be curious. You have to show what curiosity is. If you're curious in knowing about what they want or what they are excited about, they'll be like, oh my God, she's excited. So I need to get involved in this, right? They feel like equal participants as opposed to someone who's trying to impose their vision or their thought process on them. I always told my mother, Ma, why are you feeding me with stale food? Why not your brother? Oh, he's your brother. He's a male child. Why is he a male child? Why is he so celebrated and not me? I used to ask this, right? Not out of malice or anything, but it's just that I'm curious, you know? So just to figure out that what can I do to get better food so that I can, you know, up my game, that sort of thing, not out of resentment. And I've always been curious that, okay, that person speaks English like that. How can I do that? Let me go and ask. I've got a lot of rejections, honestly. People didn't want to be friends with me. People didn't want to speak to me. They didn't want to sit beside me. But I was like, hey, not that my life is any great now. I can do with a few rejections. It's not that I have a reputation to keep, right? So I used to reach out to people, you know, that, hey, you know what? I think I want to learn this. Or can you help me just just go one step ahead. I'll manage on my own risk. I've got rejection, but it's okay to have rejection. Life is all about rejections, right? And if I would not be rejected and always be accepted, I don't think I would have probably been so resilient or enjoyed my life either. Now I have funny stories to tell about my rejection as well. So, but curiosity is so, so important. I think it's always a treat to talk to kids. Even my mom, she's like 60 years old. But whenever I go home, I teach her something interesting and I come back. And she always tells my other sibling, like, look, she comes for just 2-3 days, but she's taught me this. What have you guys taught me? Right? So she's learned English. She's learned WhatsApp. She's learned Voice YouTube. She's learned Map YouTube. Maps Voice, right? So, I mean, she's curious at this age. So I definitely feel people can be curious. They just need to get out of their, you know, belief of their victimhood and see another side.
There's so many takeaways that are happening for me right now, Defenders, in our time with Shahina. Like, I'm thinking grit, right? Like, resilience, growth mindset, curiosity. Like, there's no stopping you. Not just as a designer, but in life, as a human. Like, when you can really embody those traits like Shahina has, like, there's just nothing that can stop you. I'm inspired right now. Like, there's a book called Rejection Proof that I really liked a lot. And you made me think of it when you're talking about how you've had rejections. And we have to just accept that we are going to get rejected in this life. We're going to get rejected a lot, even. And if we're not, then I question whether we're doing enough. I question whether we're passionate enough if we're not getting rejected. So that's something to ask ourselves, Defenders. But there's a book, it's called Rejection Proof, and it's by a fellow named Zha Zheng. I think he's Korean. He basically, I won't tell you the whole story, but he was trying to be like a Silicon Valley, like the next Silicon Valley app, trying to create it, and he just got rejected. And then he basically was in transition from his job. And he told his wife, he's like, you know what? He's like, I'm on a mission. I want to spend the next 100 days getting rejected at least once every day. And so he came up with, this is true. There's a book. And he came up with a challenge for himself every day for 100 days that he would go and get it with the goal, with the aim of being rejected. So the book is called Rejection Proof, How I Beat Fear and Became Invincible Through 100 Days of Rejection. So one of the challenges that he did for himself, I love this one. He actually went to a stranger's house and asked, I think this was in Texas or something, and this cowboy answers the door, and he like went and asked him, the guy was watching Super Bowl or something really important, but he went and interrupted his football game and asked him if he could play soccer in his backyard.
What? And like, then did he allow him or
what? Said, yeah, he said sure.
Oh my god. That's super awesome.
Isn't that cool? And another one of his challenges was he actually he had a Krispy Kreme worker. It was like the Olympics day or something, and he said, can I have you, he's like, I'd like to ask you if you can make me an Olympic donut. Like, where you could, if you could color the donut rings and then join them together. And the manager, like, stood there for a second. She's like, I might be able to do that for you.
How cool. People are actually, like, joining
people are,
in
like,
his
doing
bag.
It.
How
like,
cool.
That's the thing. Yeah. Like, even the most ridiculous things. Like, I guess the message in that is that you can't get a yes unless you ask, unless you try to get a no. Even the, some of the things we're so afraid of. We're so afraid of people saying no. They might say yes.
Yeah.
And like this is a perfect example. So anyway, you just inspired me to kind of mention that book. I have it on Audible. I haven't listened to it in quite a while, but it's really fun. It's really, and it's inspiring in the same ways that you mentioned, Shahina, about how much even the rejections you've experienced have, how far they've brought you to resilience, to grit, right?
Yeah.
To passion.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's living life without passion?
Yeah, and humor as well. You know,
yes.
We are a bunch of humorous people. Like,
amen.
We love humor. We make fun of each other. Like, for example, in rains, in monsoons, when our house used to be flooded in knee-deep gutter water, right? It's literally gutter water because we stay on top of a gutter. And we just used to tell ourselves, like, guess what? Nobody would ever have a swimming pool in their own house. I mean, you just make fun of it. You have to make fun of yourself,
you
of
have
your life,
to laugh.
And move ahead.
You have to. There's a reason almost all of us are connected to other humans on a social network. It's because we're all wired for connection. But unless you're a social butterfly and constant sharer, of which I am neither, it can at times feel somewhat lonely on many of these platforms. That true, genuine, personal connection can often go missing. Not only that, but you may be connected with a bunch of folks who are constantly bombarding you with cat videos and or William Hung's Hung for the Holidays Christmas album, when all you really want is a social network focused on what really matters to you. Not that Zuckerberg's Lloyd Christmas haircut at yet another round of hearings isn't entertaining. Enter User Defenders Community. Finally, a design community that has everything you love about Facebook or Twitter without Mark and Jack's constant barrage of irrelevant, intrusive ads and manipulating you with privacy violations and AI-driven algorithms that force uninteresting and irrelevant content from folks you may not even follow. UD Community is focused on one thing, UX design, and has genuinely caring, empathic designers there acting as mentors and peers to help answer questions and offer guidance and inspiration on your important design journey. When you join, you get so much more than this too. You get access to early ad-free User Defenders episodes. We have live exclusive expert trainings, sometimes with past guests of the show. We have a book club where we read a book and discuss it live as a group, and so much more. Plus, you can connect with me in a real, personal way as I try to engage on every single post. So, what do you waiting for, other than to finish that clean and jerk or pull over to the side of the road to safely join? Try User Defenders Community free for 7 days at community.userdefenders.com. After that, it's only $9.99 a month or $99 a year. Defenders, let's get better together because we're better together. My basement was flooded once. That was one of my first world problems that I experienced, and it sucked. It really sucked. We had just paid like $5,000 for flooring that we just got put in like maybe a month or two prior. We only got to enjoy the floor, the nice floor for like 2 months. And then all of a sudden the water came in. We had a bunch of rains. The water came into the basement. And here I am 2 months later, basically like burning $5,000. And then just, it was so painful. Every panel that I had to dig up with a crowbar, it just hurt my heart, right?
And then I can totally imagine you scrubbing that floor. Like, it's so cool. I've totally visualized that right now.
The water kept coming in. So it was like a full-time job to like take the wet dry vac, suck as much water up as we could for that 3 hours, and then go and like just try to dump this thing out and then go and do it again in 3 hours. We did that for a week. And it sucked. It hurt. That's just another example of like our trials.
You can
trials.
Always tell your grandchildren that story, right? That your grandfather was grabbing a $5,000 floor in the monsoons.
Exactly. Yeah. And here's the thing. Like I said, like after hearing your story, Shahina, I feel like my problem was like just it was a simple problem. Compared to just hearing your story, like I feel like, yeah, I had $5,000 to put a floor down into my finished basement, you know, like I had the means to do that. And here I am like complaining. And of course it sucks. Of course it does. I'm not taking away from that. But like, I think if we have the empathy and we get outside of ourselves and we actually, especially when we look at things in a global perspective, I've never been out of the country. The furthest I've been is Canada and Mexico. And I just feel like that doesn't count. I feel like that doesn't count. I haven't traveled that much. And I've talked to other designers who travel a lot. And they tell me, every one of them tells me, my empathy has increased so much from traveling and visiting other cultures, visiting other areas of the world, and seeing how other people live their lives. Just some of the kids that are growing up in these really awful environments, like they may have more joy than a lot of the kids growing up in the United States that have everything they ever want.
I totally relate to what you just said, like just looking at other people live, you know. Just going back to my life in the slums, I just came back from home yesterday morning. And so I again go back and meet my parents, and they still live there. Wow. You know, when I was growing up, I mean, there are people who are even in worse conditions than us, right? So we at least have a roof, we have food in our plate, and that's happiness. That's privilege for us. Wow. But my father always made it a point to get people who were underprivileged. So say someone who's selling some sweets around and he sleeps on a pavement near our house somewhere or on the floor somewhere. He used to call him and make him eat dinner with us. whatever we had. It's not like they had separate plates or something. They used to eat the same food that we eat. They used to have the same glass and plate that we ate. That, just seeing that, I still have that, you know, those memories in my head that this is what my father did. He had, you know, multiple flaws, but I think the genesis of the empathy that I got is probably from them. Because if they did not feel the other person's hunger or pain, I don't think I would have been able to probably decipher or continue with this. I would have probably been a nasty kid in a slum who does not probably care or who is indifferent to other people's pain. You know, we still give and help our neighbors, like my neighbor's kids, you know, they're poor, of course, but for their exams, they did not have money. They actually went without food for a couple of days. When I heard that, I was so, so depressed. And I actually raised money for them and so that they could just eat well and give their exams. And it's only because my parents have continued with this journey of empathy for other people to solve their problem. I think that's something that we must do, is be happy and be have an attitude of gratitude, right? That you say, my plate is full, my life's really good, let me go and fight another war, let me go and make my life better. But not dwelling in that, I think, in that victimhood that we live in a slum, was probably the biggest learning of my life, that you know, you're still in a much better position than a lot of people.
I want to ask you, I'm moved. I'm moved, Shahina. And I get, sometimes it gets a little dusty on the show, and this is one of those times for me. We all have a story to tell. And right, in fact, our lives are a story that only we can tell. How do we, since we know how powerful and effective storytelling is, especially in the field of design, how do we as designers, like you, harness our own life experiences to become better designers?
For me, I think one of the things I do very often during my design journey, even during my talks, is use analogies, right? Yeah. A lot of time, jargons and case study and design words, they get so boring that people lose you somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
So giving an analogy always helps, because they bring an instant human connection, because they have faced it somewhere else and you have faced it somewhere else. People will instantly connect with your story. And I always do that. I know it's funny. Sometimes people will be like, oh, what is she saying? This is so not part of this. But I think analogies are so important. Sometimes, you know, it's like a technical definition about something. But then people are like, can you give an example? And then you have to give an example of what it means. So every time when I have when I'm designing a screen, or when I'm, trying to solve a problem or working on a PRD, I say, you know, imagine yourself being in this position. Like, how did you speak to that rickshaw driver? Does he understand? You have to go down to his level and speak his language, behave like he does. And then you will be able to converse, because eventually design is also a conversation with your users. It is not pixels. It is a conversation that you're having with your users. And if the language is not shared, if the eventual idea is not shared with the users, how can you converse, right? So that level of understanding between your users and you is about design, is about conversation. It's just that it's a look and feel conversation, rather than a verbal conversation.
Use analogies. I've said it before, I'll say it again. If it's good enough for the Son of God, it's good enough for me. Right? Parables. There's a lot of parables, and those are, you know, Jesus told more parables than he said stated facts. And people identified with that. And those who followed him it was because they connected with that story that he told and related to. So I just feel like that's such an important point you just made about telling stories and using analogies, because people don't really care, unless you are one of those just maybe edge cases that you just love to look at like a bunch of numbers and data and you just love that. And I'm glad you exist. Thank you for existing. But there's a lot of people that just will not be able to resonate with the facts unless it's wrapped. It won't last, at least, unless it's wrapped in a story that has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and that resonates and that connects somebody emotionally to the data, to the facts. So I really like that a lot. And I want to throw something as an idea that I've actually had for quite a while, and I've been doing this, and this is the first time I've kind of put this out there, but I feel like Defenders, I feel like this will be helpful to you as well as it is for me. I created something I'm an Evernote user, and I love that tool a lot. This podcast wouldn't even be possible without it in the same way. For each of my guests, I have notes, questions, I have a template that I use, but I also have a note that I put in there called Story Bank. And what that means is basically we all, like I said earlier, we all have a unique story that only we can tell, and they're defined by experiences that only we have experienced. So what I'm suggesting we all do is we create a story bank, a note, an Evernote, put it in your Apple Notes, whatever cloud note you use, and just start thinking about stories, even from your childhood. Start thinking about really unique things that have happened to you or that you've experienced. And that just are even stories you're just like, I could not make this up, right? Especially stories like that. And then find a way to tie that into a takeaway. Find a way to tie that unique story into a design lesson, into an empathy lesson, into a humanity lesson, right? Like whatever your message is, find a way to like tell your story and then tie that in, like have an anecdote. Seth Godin calls it anecdotes. That guy is the master at this. He is the master at doing this, but I'm sure he inspired me in some ways, but I just feel like that we should all do something like that, like have a story bank, and then where we can tell our unique stories. It's not something and it's okay to tell other people's stories, but I think it's more where there's more conviction when we do it ourselves. So that's my idea, Shahina. What do you think?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I would totally agree with that. Like, in fact, the stories that I have been talking, I have somehow like the problem solving story, right? My toilet bucket story. It is a manifestation of my thought process at that time. But those learnings have helped me today also, right? So how do you connect? Because see, we're not here to talk about a victimhood story or anything of that sort, right? We're here to talk about passionate stories that can make other people drive towards their passion, right? So how can you talk about your story? I'm sure people who are entitled or privileged, anything, they all have stories, right? Drunk stories, dinner stories, school, college stories, fashion show stories, etc., etc. Try and see how it fits in your professional life. Because when you are vulnerable for one moment in a speech, in a talk, in a presentation, that is something that people will always remember. That he or she shared his personal experience. That means you're strong enough, you're so secure in yourself to be vulnerable. And it is a good quality to have, because if you're not sharing your life stories, then you're just sharing a public face of yours that other people should see. But humans love to trust each other and learn to work with each other only when there is a common connection, emotion, or like I said, vulnerability, because then they know that, okay, you've been a little vulnerable with them, I can also be vulnerable. And that's how team is built. That's how trust is built.
Hi, I'm Andy Budd. I'm a design agency founder. I speak at conferences and I run conferences. My whole purpose in life is to push design forward. So I fight for the users. You're listening to User Defender podcast with Jason Ogle.
I'm going to go into what I'm calling the Super Six. These are my superhero questions. And you are a superhero, Shahina. Like in every manner of the word. So I want to ask you, what's your design superpower?
Go at it. I don't know how else to put it. I just go at it. I don't think much. I think I just take things in my hand and I try to do it. Because if you put too much of thoughts into things, you'll just become a procrastinator. So for me, it's like it's in the present. Pick it up, build it, and work with it.
Go at it. That's great. It's like, I feel like there's some like pugilism in there too. Just like go right at the fight, go right into it and just do it. What's your design kryptonite?
I haven't really thought about it, but I think my design kryptonite would be impatience. Sometimes I'm very impatient. I want things to move fast, but then I have to be very mindful that I'm working with 50 other people together. There are teams and teams that I collaborate with. So I have to be very mindful about other people's space as well. So impatience would be my kryptonite.
Yeah, I think we can all identify with that too, right? And there's the whole move fast and break things. We're finding that's not the best way to build products.
Yeah.
Facebook has certainly made some errors doing that. That's like their mantra, or that has been their mantra. I mean, they certainly have made some insensitive errors by moving fast and breaking things. So I think that like there's the balance, right? Impatience, like haste makes waste, is like the old adage, right? And so I think there's a nice balance where we do need to keep moving. We do need to stay nimble. We do need to just launch and test, but we also need to make sure we do diligence in the midst of that. So I really identify with that one as well, Shahina.
Yeah.
What's your, this is a fun one. What would your UX superhero name be?
Ruthless UX. That's my pseudo name. I created it a couple of years back and it'll always be my superhero name, I think. Ruthless UX.
And that totally defines, like, that's a good title for you, especially given everything we've learned about your story. Like, you have been ruthless and it's paid off. What's one habit that contributes to your success? Being ruthless?
That's definitely, that'll be repetitive. I've come up with something. Perseverance. I think that constant and consistent pace of getting up every day, doing it, getting up every day, doing it. That discipline is so, so important, because only passion can take you so much, talent can take you so much, but discipline and perseverance can take you a long way in life.
Jocko Willink says, discipline equals freedom. I fully agree with him. He's a U.S. Marine, retired U.S. Marine, and he wrote a book about leadership, which is really, really good, called Extreme Ownership. He and one of his fellow soldiers, they wrote this book and told some really powerful stories, but it's really just the whole core of it is about owning your crap. Like, if you, especially as a leader, and I know you've experienced, as you're a design leader, you're managing a lot of folks doing some innovative work. So it's really like, I think the best leaders are the ones that own their stuff. And so anyway, like, I don't know why I started going there, but other than like just persevering through it and owning it. So if you could recommend one book to our listeners, what would it be and why?
One book that I really, really like and I keep going back to is a book called Predictably Irrational by Dan O'Reilly. Dan O'Reilly is actually a psychologist and a scientist in user behavior. And his talks are available on TED as well. But reason why I really like his book and his talk and in general his work is because he has an understanding of humans in a way that we sometimes don't understand ourselves. Why are humans so irrational, right? For example, that if someone's driving a car and using his phone, is he trying to denote that he does not care about his life? Definitely not. He cares about his life. But why are we irrational, right? Why do we behave in certain ways that we do? And when we are pointed out that you behave like this, we sometimes even can't reason out that, oh, we did behave like this. So his book is very twisted and it has a lot of examples and case studies. I really, really love that because it helps me in designing, because psychology is an important part of our designs, and it does give me an insight into human behavior. So yeah, I really like that book.
I'm a recent student of psychology and I love the pop sci genre of books. So I definitely have heard of Dan. And I actually have one of his books, his other book called The Honest Truth About Dishonesty.
Yes, yes.
And I haven't read it yet, but now I really want to read. Now I want to get Predictably Irrational too. I've heard good things about that book as well. So now I got to get another book. How do I find time? I need a Neo Jack in my head for books.
In fact, right? I'm, like in the Matrix. Now that I'm going to London, I'm actually pestering Dan on chat, LinkedIn, everywhere, please meet me. So he has sort of agreed.
Nice.
Because I went somewhere, saw his schedule, and I was like, I saw you're free on this day. Meet me.
Oh, I'm wow. Such a... Way to go.
Yeah.
Way to be ruthless.
Yes.
So here's my last question for you, Shahina. And I'm going to kind of reframe this question a little bit. I typically ask, what's your best advice for aspiring UX superheroes? And you can certainly answer that as well. But I feel like I want to frame this a little bit differently based on everything that that we've learned about you today and your journey, especially being a woman and really having to fight a lot of expectations or traditions. And I just want to ask you, like, what's your message for all, especially the women defenders who maybe feel repressed or maybe feel held back where they happen to be now? And then you can also offer your advice for everybody that's really trying to succeed in design, however you want to answer that.
I think for women and for young girls, I would definitely like to tell them that take risks, whether risk in terms of relationships, whether risks in terms of learning, whether risk in terms of failing, just take risks. The more you take risks, the fear of losing just gets out of your way. So it's very important for women to take risk. We have been born and brought up in so much of safety, right, that we've not been taught how to take risks, right? If we feel very apologetic if we speak out of turn, right? We'll be like, I'm sorry, but can I talk about this? You know, there's a sense of apology in something that you do. Don't do that. Just take risk. Even if you're offending somebody, it's fine, because you will learn by offending people. You know, you will learn by, even if people get pissed off, it's okay. The fact that you're a woman, they're any which way is pissed off. So just let it go. Just take risks in everything. Because once you take risks, your sense of taking calculated risks in the future increases. And then you build a sense of actually taking risks that are worth it. But you have to start somewhere.
So powerful. If you don't mind answering the other part of that question, is just what's your best advice for designers, new up and coming UXers who are really just trying to break in, really trying to land their first job, maybe feel discouraged, or just don't know what to learn or where to go. Like, what's your best advice for these defenders listening?
So the best advice for them would be curious and be shameless. Be curious, because there's enough to learn. There's always something to learn. I feel so inequipped, you know. I feel there are so many better designers than me. I constantly see, how did they do that? They're so good. How can I become like them? It's not that I want to copy somebody, but it's just that, you know, admire someone so much that you want to become like them. Because somewhere you will need inspiration, you know. Have that. Be curious, you know. Look for inspiration. It's all around you. There's ample amount of inspiration. And be shameless, make mistakes, you know. Even if your work is bad, go and show it to somebody. Someone will say, what crap this is, but it's okay. At least you know it's crap, then you can move to a better version of it. It might still be crap, but after 10 iterations it might become better. Be shameless, don't feel bad about it. So, you know, be curious and be shameless.
Shahina, this has been just rich beyond my already deep expectations of our time. Like, this has been moving. It's been filled with passion, filled with fire. And like, I defenders, if you're not motivated right now, if you're not inspired, if you're not moved, I'd say check your pulse. You may not be alive. You may not be alive. Somebody might be putting ear pods into a corpse. Like,
I can't believe you said that.
It's true.
Oh, goodness.
Now I have a weird visual in my head of like a grandfather like figure or grandmother with ear pods, like open casket with like ear pods in. Oh, that's so weird. Sorry. Not sorry. No. What's the best way for our defenders to connect and to keep up with you? Because I know they're going to want to.
Yeah, they can connect with me on Twitter. My handle is RuthlessUX. Or they can just email me on RuthlessUX@gmail.com.
Shahina, you are a new superhero of mine. And I no doubt every defender listening right now, you are the perfect example of UX beyond the screen. Because just what you've told us, what you've shared, and just being so vulnerable, which is a superpower, by the way. Vulnerability is, I think, one of the greatest, and you have it in spades. Just your work in social services, your legal counsel for those who can't afford it, your work in sanitation. Oh my gosh. Not to mention what you're doing in the actual field of design. I mean, design is all around us, and you are making such a huge impact, and you've inspired me so much, and no doubt, again, that I know the Defenders are with me.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Jason. Also, I am extremely proud of the work that you're doing. This is a very unique podcast, and that is why I only reached out to you, and I'm so glad that you have me on this show, because I was more than just being, I was so excited to just talk to you, because I heard your podcast and I was like, this guy is so amazing. It is so casual, candid, and so honest. I need to just speak to him. So thank you so much for having me.
Oh, I am humbled. Thank you, Shahina. I just want to say, like, as always, and especially last but not least, fight on, my friend. One of the greatest blessings in running this show is that I get to facilitate and share origin stories, and sometimes all three acts, of the lives of UX superheroes. I consider myself a story catcher, and I couldn't be more proud and humbled at the same time to do this here at User Defenders. Thank you for giving me the opportunity by paying your valuable attention. I do not and never will take it for granted. No matter our path, no matter our journey, we can learn and grow into the humans we are meant to be, no matter who you are, no matter where you've come from, and quite possibly, not unlike Shahina, the mire and muck you've had to crawl through to get to where you are now. Even if you're still crawling through it, you matter, and you have a story to tell that only you will be able to tell. A story that's significant, and we and others need to hear. It all starts with embracing our story. Yes, even the painful parts of it. Because truth be told, we would not be who we are without the painful parts. We can't know the sweetness of victory without having first tasted the immense bitterness of defeat. We need you. We need your story. We need your contribution. We need you here to keep overcoming so you can be the hero we and your users need now more than ever. And always remember, you are not alone. We have each other. Even the greatest superheroes around needed an Avengers and a Justice League. I'll conclude this final thought with a legendary quote from Theodore Roosevelt, because after 100 years, nobody has yet, nor quite possibly will ever, say it better. It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong stumble, or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to those who are actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strive valiantly, who errs, who come short again and again because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds. Who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends themselves in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if they fail, at least fail while daring greatly, so that their place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. Tweet your takeaways, Defenders. I'm at User Defenders, and Shahina is at Ruthless UX, of course. We'd love to hear what you thought of the episode and engage with you around it. I want to take a second to give a quick shout out and a heartfelt thank you to two new patrons of the show. I want to start by thanking Josh Hall. Josh is actually my Nissan service writer, and he is amazing. This guy, I can't tell you the level of customer service and care and hugs. I get hugs from this guy. You know, and anybody who knows me knows I'm a hugger. So I got to tell you, Josh is amazing. I can't believe he did this. He just out of the blue just decided to become a patron of the show. And so Josh, I just thank you. If you happen to be listening, I just thank you for your support for me and this show, and also just for your incredible customer service. You are a shining pillar of customer service in the world, and empathy and care for your customers. So thank you. Thank you so much, my friend. And thanks for your friendship. And I want to also thank Joel Ryerson. I wish I had more to say about Joel because I don't know him much yet. But guess what? He's a UD community member now, so I am excited to get to know him. I know he is transitioning into product design, that he let us know on the community recently, and that he has just a hunger and a passion for learning everything he can about this field and to become better And so I already love you, Joel, because you have that heart for just bettering yourself and then bettering others. That's what this is all about. So, Joel, thank you so much for your contribution. Thank you for your support of User Defenders. And I'm so glad you're on the community. I look forward to engaging with you more there and getting to know you more in a personal way and helping however I can and learning with and from you as well. So, Defenders listening, I don't mention this often, probably not often enough, because I don't think many of you realize I do have a Patreon page where you can actually join up and assemble with me there with your support, even as little as $5 a month. And there's so many cool like perks that you get from doing that. But I just know in my heart, possibly because there aren't very many yet, I know that the folks who have jumped in to help offer tangible support to me in this show do it not because of the perks, even though they are pretty great. You can check it out. I'll give you the URL in a second. But I know that folks don't do it for that. They do it because they believe in me. They believe in what I'm doing with this show. And they've benefited greatly from this content, this free content. So I appreciate all of the patrons so much that help keep this show going, help keep me going in a tangible way. And I invite you, Defenders listening, if you feel compelled, no pressure at all. I understand it's a commitment. Even $5 a month can be a commitment. So if you have the means and if you feel led to support me in the show, please feel free to do that. You can go to userdefenders.com/Patreon. I want to thank Eli Jorgensen for the astonishing artwork, Darren Goldsmith for the sensational show notes, and just both of these guys, their impeccable work throughout this season and previous ones as well. I am truly honored to work with you guys and your caliber of superhero and just the amazing sidekicks that you are. It humbles me, and I'm honored. I'm honored to work with you. Thank you for all your great work. I want to thank the sponsors for this last half of the season, and actually Pork Bun was a sponsor for the entire season. So thank you so much, Pork Bun. And thanks, UCI. Their master's degree program online looks amazing. So definitely check that out. Please support the sponsors of the show as well. That also helps keep things going here. And you can check out their offerings, the links to their offerings at the show notes page at userdefenders.com/070. This has been an incredible season, quite possibly the best yet. I know I say that every time, but I mean it every time. Coming from a very introverted kind of background to getting on a mic and talking to the most inspiring designers in the world, I've been incredibly blessed to be able to do this. So it is such a joy to do this show. And let me reframe that I get to do this show for an incredibly inspiring and hungry audience of defenders like you. I would say my final plea to you as we go into a long season break would be to keep growing. We're either growing or dying. And as long as we purpose in our hearts to keep growing, we will keep getting better and have more to offer those in need all around us. So lastly, I want to just wish you all an incredibly wonderful holiday break. I'm going to take one. I'm not going to be back probably till spring of 2020. I need the time. I need to stay married and I need to see what my kids have been up to. So, but with that, I want to wish you and yours a Merry Christmas, Hanukkah Kwanzaa, and Happy New Year, 2020. I told my dentist that 2020 would be the year of the optometrist, and it completely went over his head. So anyway, keep fighting the good fight, Defenders. It's worth it. And until next time, next year, next season, fight on, my friends.